Hi, welcome back. Hour number three. Very important hour for you tonight. I hope you'll listen carefully, take notes, or certainly spread the program around. We get a chance to talk to my colleague of since 2014, long time, Russell Bentley, who is over there and who has a lot to say about what's going on in the war in Ukraine now and in the Donbass at the line of contact. There's a great deal of activity. We all know that Zelensky and his other cronies have no problem sending troops by the tens of thousands, literally through minefields in a frontal assault against certain death in many, many cases. And these people have no air cover, no air support. They got nothing. And they're not even well trained. They're just being sacrificed. That's really hideous. And it's going on as we speak right this moment. Russell, are you there? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Jeff, I'm here. I'm glad to be back on the show again. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Yes, sir, always. I've been putting up military summary videos on the homepage a couple times a day to keep track of it. The guy does a pretty good job. I think he's got good sources in the Russian military. They're feeding him a lot of data. He speaks very quickly, but very succinctly. He's right on the money, as far as I can tell. Give us your view, my friend. And, oh, before we do that, let me pull back and go to this Russian professor. And I think I sent you the story, who's recommending that Russia consider using nukes in a shock and awe way of ending this meat-grinding bloodbath ordeal, so it doesn't go on for another 2, 3, 4 years or whatever they want it to do, because we know they can stop it. But he's suggesting using nukes because he does think that the West will recoil, pull back, and not answer in kind. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you know, personally, I'm against the use of nuclear weapons unless as a complete last resort. And the fact is that right now, you know, Ukraine is not winning. They're not breaking through anywhere. They're, you know, like you said, they're butting their heads up against a granite wall. And, you know, they're the ones, I mean, and it's, you know, it's not a cakewalk for our side at all. But, you know, their casualties are much higher than ours. And our line is holding, you know, so.
Right.
You know, unless
I'm hearing 10 to 1, Russell, about 10 to 1
that's,
now.
It's probably not that high, but it's definitely more than 2 to 1, you know, and I mean, that kind of, you know, those kind of casualties are, you know, not sustainable. You know, there's, you know, tens of millions less Ukrainian citizens today than there were 10 years ago, you know, not because just of death and the war, but because of emigration. You know, it's, you know, Ukraine is a failed state now. You know, this is, you know, you can look at every place that the United States and NATO has so-called liberated, you know, over the last 50 years, and you can't, I mean, not only can you not point to any place that they made things better, you can't point to any place that didn't just, you know, go through horrible, you know, deterioration and suffering. You know, I mean, you go, you know, Iran or, I mean, Iraq or Libya or Yugoslavia or, you know, any place that the U.S. has invaded, you know, they never make anything better, you know. And it's an interesting point that I like to make is that, you know, it's not just in foreign countries, you know, I mean, every American should ask themselves this question, you know, when's the last time that the U.S. government did anything that made life better for the average American citizen?
Very Name good it. Point.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and, you know, and that, you know, that's a good way to end the conversation because, you know, you ask that to somebody that's from the States and they, you know, they can't really say anything, you know, I mean, so, and it's, the same thing is that, you know, it's, you know, this war that's going on is, you know, it's not just about Ukraine or Russia. You know, this is the war of genuine evil against the future of humanity. And it's a global war, and all of us are on one side or the other. And, you know, it's our actions that determine which side we're on. You know, everybody can say, you know, like, say, Scott Ritter or something, say, oh, I love Russia and the Russian soul and la-di-da. But, you know, he's there in America. He's basically telling everybody to not worry and go back to sleep. So, you know, his actions aren't helping anybody but himself. And, you know, so whatever side he says he's on, his actions prove which side he's really on, which is, you know, telling everybody to go back to sleep. People need to understand that, you know, this is a very, very dangerous situation for Russia and for the future of humanity. You know, as I've been saying, as you know, since 2015, as goes Don Bass, so goes the world. If Don Bass goes down, you know, Crimea is going down, Russia's going down, and then there's nobody left to stand against to any degree against what, you know, the Nazis of the 21st century have in store for us, have planned for us, you know, and that's basically mass extermination and enslavement of whoever doesn't get, you know, their organs harvested or, you know, whatever, you know, thrown in the ditch and buried alive, whatever, like that, like what, which they actually do, you know, so.
Yeah. I saw a story yesterday. I don't think I pulled it. I should have. I just got swept away. But it says something about Ukraine wanting to pay, as if they're paying for anything, to pay the West for some of the armaments and ammunition and so forth they're getting with human organs. I'm not sure if it was a satire article or not, but the point
it's
is...
It's not satire.
No, there's so much organ harvesting going on there. It's not funny. It's huge.
It is
apparently
not funny at all. And it's, I mean, it's horrific. It's a ghoul. In fact,
yes.
I mean, it's like an alternative form of cannibalism. Ukraine is currently the main source country in the world for illegal organ harvesting. It has been for years. The Red Cross was kicked out of Donbass back in 2015 because they were doing it. They're back now again, unfortunately, but...
I hate that organization.
That organization, yeah. Too, man. They're completely despicable. You know, it's like every truly evil organization, you know, they put up a front of being the good guys, and they're not, man, and they are not. You know, I mean, the Red Cross... Recently, they quit providing medicine for HIV and tuberculosis infection in
Ukraine. They just pulled the plug
Ukraine.
On it, huh?
Yeah,
in
like,
Ukraine.
I mean, in the Donbass, in the Donbass, you understand, on our side.
Oh,
yet,
on your side.
For,
okay.
For some reason, you know, they're still here. I mean, their headquarters is... You know, less than a mile from where we're staying right now in the center of Donetsk. And, you know, every time I drive by there, you know, I just want to spit out the window. You know, I mean, but the fact is, you know, it is an absolutely beyond any debate that Ukraine is the main source country for illegal human organ trafficking in the world today. Their main market is USA, Europe, and Israel. And, you know, there's people here that are making big, big bank, you know, selling human organs. And, I mean, it's, you know, what you could call it red gold, you know.
I like your statement that it's an alternate form of cannibalism. It really is cannibalizing human beings.
It really is. You know what I mean? There's been, you know, multiple, you know, eyewitnesses, you know, that have gone in, you know, soldiers and civilians that have gone into places that were previously under the control of the, you know, the U.S.-backed UKROP government and just, you know, and finding, you know, human butcher shops. And it's
horror stories and endless horror stories that never are allowed in the Western media. We never see it here. Sometimes an independent journalist will get some word out that gets picked up, but no, it's all hidden. Mm-hmm. Butcher shops, butchery. That's exactly what it is. And they just probably throw these bodies in open pits and mass bury them. Say they were just MIAs. Yep. I don't know. It's absolutely incredible what they do.
And you understand that the most valuable organs are the ones that come from young people, you know. Because,
you got it. Oh, yeah.
You know, they're like...
young men.
You know, yeah, and so... You know, there you go right there. You know, it's...
I know. It's look, for those who don't understand that this planet is by and large now in the hands of satanic evil of the blackest order, you're missing the point. You're in the dark. You've got to get out of that and understand who's running this planet. This is pure evil. Unbelievable evil. And if there are ETs visiting here, even some of them must be shocked at the evil that's going on here. Every time I hear a story at all about an area that has been taken back from Ukrainian when they take a village back, an area back from the Ukrainians, the people tell stories that are just horrific. The Russian POWs, almost all of them apparently, are being tortured to some degree or another. I'm sure many of them are being executed on the spot. This is not warfare in the traditional sense of it. This is down and dirty as it gets. On the one side, the Russians continue to present as very fair-minded. They're trying not to harm any of the civilians. They got one hand tied behind their back in many ways, don't they? Because they don't want to hurt people.
Mm-hmm. And I mean... you know, that's the big, big danger, you know, is that, you know, the war's been going on for almost 10 years now. You know, a lot of people, you know, have the misconception that it started, you know, in February of 2022. You know, it was going on for years before that, and it was a very, you know, serious war even, you know, back then. I mean, it's gotten a lot heavier since then. You know, the military confrontations have gotten a lot bigger. The shelling of civilian areas, particularly the city of Donetsk, where I live and where I am right now, has increased, you know, by orders of magnitude. But the point is that it's not the Russians who started it by any means. It is the Ukrainian government that was overthrown in a coup d'etat and is now under absolutely complete control of the United States deep state, the secret services, you know, the Biden family. It's coming out, all the corruption that they did.
So $20 to $30 million in bribes now. The one congressman here says he's got evidence. $20 to $30 million.
That's
minimal.
A fraction of,
it's more
of
than
the,
that.
You know, right. I mean, it's like, you know, when you catch a car thief or something, you know, and it's like, you know, the time that he gets caught is not the first time that he stole the car, you know. So,
guys,
you know, they're, I mean, and you understand that Biden in the early days under the Obama administration, he was the point man. He was the guy calling the shots in Ukraine, you know, as you can remember. The time when he told Poroshenko to fire the Ukrainian prosecutor that was looking into Burisma and all that stuff. And he said, you don't get the $1 billion loan if this guy's not fired by 5 o'clock when I leave. And he was fired before Biden left. And Biden literally himself bragged about it, you know. So, I mean, when you understand that
scum
nothing,
of the earth.
The scum of the earth, and nothing happens in Ukraine. Not only not without the permission of the U.S. government, but without the instruction of the U.S. government. So that means every time that there's, you know, civilians murdered in the city of Donetsk because of random shelling, that's on the orders of the U.S. government. You know, when this dam got blown up, you know, which was, you know, not just a crime against humanity, but, you know, ecocide. You know, they flooded and destroyed not only cities, but 100,000 acres of prime farmland, you know, that was, you know, I saw a video of a guy weeping, you know, looking at his flooded watermelon patch, you know, that he had been working on. And I mean, you know, it's, you know, I mean, and the flooding, you know, it's poisoning the water. I mean, it's changed the salinity of the Black Sea. No, not the whole Black Sea, but like on the coastal areas near.
Oh, that's interesting. That's like how much water went in there. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And the thing is, you know, they're saying right now that, you know, there's, you know, a couple of score of dead people from this flooding, but it's going to come out that there was, you know, many hundreds of people were killed because what happened, I mean, you understand that the Ukrainians, on the orders of the United States, they blew up this dam. You know, only a fool believes the lies, the fake information that the Ukrops are putting out, that it was the Russians that did it. You know, it's just ridiculous to, you know, even believe anything that the Ukrops are saying, but particularly that it was the Russians that blew up the dam. It was absolutely 100% HIMARS rockets provided by the United States, you know, operated by the United States. These, you know, this is not regular artillery. And, you know, they've got, you know, U.S. mercenaries that are the ones pulling the trigger on these things. That's what blew up the dam. You know, it flooded all down the Dnieper River. And people need to understand that on the right bank of the Dnieper, which the Ukrops control, is, you know, it's up on a cliff. It's on the high ground. The left bank where the Russians are, you know, it's basically, you know, river bottom, you know,
valleys,
you know, and so that's what got flooded. You know, the Ukrops intentionally flooded the Russians' side. You know, our first line of defense, our minefields, our trenches got flooded, and there was a lot of people on our side that, you know, there was, you know, shelling. It happened at like 3 o'clock in the morning, you understand. There had been shelling all night. A lot of people were down in their basements. You know, the dam gets blown up. You know, it's like a flash flood, you know, a wall of water basically coming down the river. You know, somebody's in their basement, old lady, little kids, you know, something like that. You know, and it's not like, you know, all of a sudden there's, you know, an inch of water, and then a few minutes later there's a foot of water. It's like, you know, a giant fire hose, you know, it's, you know, in 1 minute, the basement's full of water, you know.
Got it, yeah.
So a lot of people got drowned by that, you know, and a lot of, you know, just imagine the pollution of everything that happens when, you know, whole cities and, you know, graveyards and everything you can imagine get flooded and sit down.
Well, it also, Russell, moved a lot of the mines around. From both sides.
Yeah.
Didn't matter who planted them. The mines got moved all over the place, so they don't know where they are. They can't track them. It's very difficult to demine an area that has no map for it. All right. Now, let me go up to the concept that obviously pushed, ordered by Washington, most likely. Maybe the UK. I don't know. Those bastards are as evil as it gets, too. But the attacks on Russian towns and villages in Russia, across the border. One town had 40,000 people in it. It's been evacuated now, I think. And that was getting shelled by drones and artillery. It's only six miles from the border, I think. Something like that. 4 miles. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's very close. So the attacks on Russia proper, the attacks on Moscow, right, with drones.
Mm-hmm.
This is nothing but provocation after provocation. Now the Russians are talking about it. Building a buffer from the border south into Ukraine wide enough to prevent Ukrainian, at least long-range artillery, from being able to hit Russia. They're going to push it, clean everything out. Supposedly, the Wagner people are going to be tasked with doing that to a large degree. They've been withdrawn from the Artemovsk area. They're now up, apparently regrouping and resting, and they're going to, in August, begin to make a buffer zone. That's the word. Geopolitically, how much more of this do you expect? How many more attacks on Russian soil do you expect? Where is that?
Well, I mean, as we've been seeing, the pattern is, continuous escalation and provocation, by the 21st century Nazis, which is the U.S. and UKRAIPS and NATO, EU.
Right.
I mean,
right.
And, they're not going to stop until they are stopped. So basically, the idea of making a buffer zone between Ukraine and what, has been Russia, since,
forever,
the end of the Second World War,
right?
To me, it's a stupid idea because,
it's another Band-Aid, isn't it?
It's exactly another Band-Aid, it's not going to stop provocations. I mean, the city of Donetsk is now, officially under the Russian Constitution. It is a Russian, it's Russian soil. I mean, the whole Donetsk Oblast, the whole region that
right.
used to be in Ukraine is now officially considered to be, Russian soil, I mean, so, and they haven't moved the Ukrainian army, from artillery range of the center of Donetsk yet.
It's still there.
So,
it's still there. Shouldn't that
really
be the first
matter.
Buffer? That should be one of the first buffers they build.
And as I have said all along since the start of the special military operation, and we're talking about like almost a year and a half ago now, that the Russians came in, and I appreciate and respect, thank God and Vladimir Putin and the Russian army for coming in when they did. It was a week before a planned offensive that the Ukrainian army, on the orders of the U.S. and NATO, were planning to come in, surround the cities, come into the cities and just literally commit genocide and basically kill everyone in the cities. And I mean, Donetsk is a city of 1 million people. You understand that they came in at the very last moment and they saved, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people, innocent civilians, by doing that. But yet at the same time, since then, it's been basically a frozen conflict. They have made some progress in the south. Mariupol has been liberated. There's now a land bridge from Russia to the Crimean Peninsula, which is good and which is important. But the people in Donetsk are wondering, when we're going to quit getting shelled. I mean, the Ukrainian army, NATO mercenaries, the whole nine yards, is still literally on the city limits of Donetsk, Makiivka, Gorlovka. I mean, from the main Ukrainian army base in Avdiivka to the center of the city of Donetsk is 12 kilometers, man. And I'm talking about that's like 7 miles.
Something that the average American has no idea about. I am really surprised that there has been no effort to clear that area and push those people out of Houston.
Well, I mean, there's been efforts to do that, but they have not been effective.
Mm-hmm.
And, and at this point, there's a lot of, there's a lot of questions. I mean, or actually, let me put it this way. It's becoming clear that the same, parasite class, the one percenters, the billionaires, that are the enemy of humanity, Russia has them too. And they have a lot of power. And I'm not saying that Vladimir Putin is one of them. I'm not saying that he is controlled by them, but it is becoming obvious that he cannot control them and that they are calling a lot of shots. And I've said it like this, man, that the military war and the economic war are two sides of the same coin. You can, and check this out, Jeff, You can tell exactly how the military war in Ukraine is going just by looking up on the internet the U.S. dollar to Russian ruble exchange rate. And the more rubles that it takes to buy a dollar, the less well the war is going for Russia. And I mean, and it's exact. I mean, it's like you can't have heads without tails. It's the same coin, two different sides. And, you know, and this woman, Nabi Bula, who is the head of the central bank in Russia, there's a lot of people that just think that she's a complete traitor. I mean, what she has done, you know, as far as the economic war, you know, you understand that the U.S. and Europe have frozen, as they call it, $300 billion worth of Russian, you know, foreign reserves that were held in Western banks. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, Western corporations leave Russia or something like that, and they, you know, and they, whatever, they have, you know, like financial claims against Russia, you know, instead of doing what makes sense and saying, hey, look, you know, you guys have stolen $300 billion from us. You know, you say that we owe you, you know, $50 million bucks or something. Go talk to the guys that stole our $300 billion. Let them pay you from the money that they stole. But no, Nabi Bula is instead saying, oh, yes, we'll go ahead and pay you your $50 million. What, I mean, you know, and it's a lot more than that in many cases. But, I mean, so...
She's actually dead. I don't know this. I'm learning.
Yeah,
this
yeah. It's. I mean, it's really
that's
bad.
That's disgusting.
I mean, it's,
repulsive.
It is disgusting and repulsive. And there's, you know, I mean, there's no excuse for it. You know, it's. I mean, it's. You know, like I said, the military and the economic war are, you know, joined at the hip. So this is genuine treachery. You know, I mean, and you talk about, you know, that's on the economic front. On the military front, I mean, this guy, Evgeny Prigozhin, who's one of the greatest heroes in all of Russian history, he's the guy who runs Wagner. He's got a real feud going with Sergei Shoigu, the Minister of Defense. And it's
becoming
clear.
Well, thank you for saying that. Russell, thank you for saying that. That man has shown more dignity, class, leadership, and military brilliance than anyone else. Now, and they have tried to keep that kind of quiet. But he's a remarkable man. And those people fighting with the Wagner group are truly... I'm not knocking the Russian military at all. Those young men are as fine as they get in many cases. But without Wagner PMC... They wouldn't have taken Artemovsk or Bakhmut, I don't think. It would have been double as long. Those people went in there and took it. And Prigozhin deserves a lot of credit. You're right. And
They really do. And I mean, it's just, I mean, you know, from objective fact, you know, the Wagner Group has been the most effective and successful military unit in the Russian army. So far, I mean, that's beyond any question, you know.
Right. Is Shoigu going to succeed in forcing them to sign on with the Russian Federation?
This is a complete provocation. And, you know, that Shoigu said that everybody that's in the private military contractors have to sign a contract with the Russian MOD and become, you know, officially, you know, under the command of the MOD. And Prigozhin has said that he's not going to do it. And nor should he. And I understand that, like, in the last 2 days, Prigozhin met face-to-face personally with Vladimir Putin. And, I mean, it's been announced that they met, but nothing's been announced about what, you know, the outcome of this meeting was. But, I mean, and I can tell you that Prigozhin has, you know, He was criticized during the work in Bakhmut for, you know, publicly accusing Shoigu and the Russian Ministry of Defense of intentionally withholding ammunition from the Wagner troops, not, you know, from, I mean, literally giving them 1/10 of what they needed to do the job that they were given. And as Prigozhin said, he said, you know, every artillery shell that you don't give us means another one of my men needlessly die. And, you know, he was criticized for that. But, you know, most of these armchair generals and idiots that are criticizing Prigozhin, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, it's wartime and we have to all make a, you know, a united front and we can't be have conflict between our side, you know. But the thing is, when there's traitors, when there's mistakes that are, you know, or not even mistakes, but when things are done that cost, you know, good men's lives, you know, then they have to be addressed, you know. And, you know, one thing that Prigozhin just did this last week, he came out and he told the story of what happened in Deir Ezzor in February of 2018, where a task force of Wagner troops were moving toward a Conoco refinery in Syria, and they had been promised air support and air defense support from the Russian Ministry of Defense. Once they started moving, an order came from Moscow not to take off for Russian aircraft, not to take off for the air defense to turn off, and that no one that made these moves was to tell Wagner that they had been done.
And, well, they were set up. They were trying to annihilate them, weren't they?
They were totally set up. One of my good friends, one of the guys that I served with in 2015 at the Donetsk airport in the Vostok battalion, who's now in Wagner, he was there that night. And, you know, he was one of the ones, the lucky ones, one of the few lucky ones that didn't get hit. But, you know, so Prigozhin has just come out recently, and he said, and he even, you know, he met Shoigu later and tried to talk to him about it, and Shoigu just laughed it off and said, you know, get out of my face or whatever. But this is genuine, you know, what can you call it? Knife in the back treachery, man. That's what it is. That's what he's fighting. And I can say that this is the true fact, bro, is that, you know, there are enemies of Russia and enemies of the future of humanity that hold great power in Moscow, and the greatest danger to the future of the Russian Federation and the future of humanity that Russia is defending is, you know, it's not in Kiev or even Washington, D.C. It's the traitors in Moscow.
Wow.
And so, they have to be dealt with. They have to be dealt with.
Nothing positive is going to transpire until that is dealt with, I would agree. First, you've got the oligarchs, okay? You've got oligarchs in Ukraine. You've got a lot of oligarchs in Russia. Putin does not... The Western mind is so simple, most of it. They don't understand anything. They think Putin has an unopposed, clear field of leadership and dominance, and he can do whatever he wants.
He's very, very popular. I mean, he has an 80%... approval rating, which the exact opposite of Biden or Kamala Harris, you know. And I got to say that the oligarchs in Russia, you know, I mean, as I've always said, you know, I mean, you know, there's no, you know, every billionaire on this planet is a thief. You know, nobody can work hard enough.
Nobody's got clean hands. You're right. You are right.
To earn, to actually work to earn $1 billion, which is $1,000 million.
Good
point. You know
what
I mean? And most of these billionaires, you know, they don't just have $1 billion. You know, they got, you know, tens or scores or even hundreds of billions of dollars, you know, and no one mm-hmm. can work that hard. That kind of money can only be scammed or stolen. And, you know, and I'll tell you something else, and this is like when it gets back to like the economic warfare, you know, from 2022 to 2023, Russia got 22 new billionaires.
22.
And understand, and understand that the Russian population is like 130 million. You know, it's the biggest geographically. It's the biggest country in the world, but it's pretty small. It's like one third the size of the United States population was. And understand this too, that the number of it went up from 188. Billionaires, Russian billionaires, to 210 billionaires. Mm-hmm. And the combined wealth of Russian billionaires increased in the last year by $150 billion, not rubles, but dollars. So, you know, and here in this war economy, you know, when everybody's, you know, and understand this too, the Russian military budget is about $75 billion a year.
That's incredible compared to the U.S., which is pushing on close to a trillion now.
Yeah, yeah. It's less than one-tenth of what the U.S. alone military budget is. But you understand that the amount of wealth that the billionaires in Russia increased in the last year, you know, of the special military operation was enough to pay the Russian military budget more than 2 years of the full Russian military budget. So you can just understand that. I mean, and I can tell you, dude, I went on a humanitarian aid mission to some of the guys here, some of the heroes defending Petrovsky District, working in Mariinka yesterday. I mean, they're asking, you know, I mean, and of course, you know, they need, the main thing they need is drones, man. That's the one thing about this war, is that it is the first, you know, drone war. And, yes, you know, the drones are total game changers. And, you know, they're, you know, one of the most important weapons in this war. And so we brought some drones, but, you know, they're also asking for things like flashlights, you know. I mean,
you had to bring them drones and flashlights?
Yeah.
Come on, Russell, you know, this is stupid. This is, or intense.
DPR military units. The Russians, the actual, you know, Russian army is pretty well equipped. But our guys, the DPR, have been, you know, as they say, sucking the hind tit the whole time. Even Vostok, my old battalion, Kodakovsky, just now, after 10 years of saying, no, we don't do fundraisers, has just now started, I mean, just in the last week, he said, look, we're going to have to start raising money to get equipment for our guys. And Kodakovsky is absolutely the equal of Prigozhin as a hero, as a patriot of Russia, as a true defender of Russia and the Russian world. And, you know, for him to, you know, to have to be raising money, you know,
it's actually embarrassing for the Russians. Here they have this whole military infrastructure in Donbass, and they should be supporting it with equipment all day long. They got all this free organization, all these free fighting heroes, and what's it cost them? Equipment. So fund them. Give them the armor they need. Give them the drone. For God's sakes, give them the drones. I don't get that. All right, I've got to move to another area here I want to cover. Mm-hmm. Right now, we've got the line of contact, and any of you listening can go to the top of the homepage and look at the military summary video up there and understand the line of contact. You'll see it. It's all there. It's the line between Donbass and the UKROP positions. We're looking at a World War I stalemate to a large degree. Now, a lot of people would like to see the Russians break out and roll through much of Ukraine. But that article by the Russian who claimed that the use of nukes is really the only way to go to bring this to a conclusion, or it's going to go on for another 1, 2, or 3 years, and then it'll still be a partial problem because it won't be completely cleansed, Ukraine. They may leave Kiev alone. I don't know. But why are they fighting this kind of a war? Do they have to? Is there nothing else that can be done for the Russian side to broom these people out? I'm not talking necessarily about micro nukes. No. I'm talking about tactics. What is your assessment of the tactics as they are now being used against the UKROP army?
I'm not impressed at all. You know, it's... the very minimum that must be achieved in order to fulfill the goals of the special military operation, which is to denazify and demilitarize Ukraine to the point that it is no longer a threat to the Russian Federation and the people of the Russian Federation, the absolute minimum is for Russia to control Kiev, the city of Kiev, and basically everything east of Kiev that's now considered Ukraine. And when people talk about, oh, we'll make a deal and we'll just take the four eastern oblasts of Kherson, Kharkov, Lugansk, Donetsk, and Zaporozhye, that doesn't work at all. You know, that still puts us basically within artillery range.
But the war will never end. It'll never stop.
That's right. And, you know, actually, one of the guys that I gave a drone to yesterday, he's also an old friend that I served with in 2015. He's an officer in the Spetsnaz battalion now. And we asked him yesterday, you know, and he's a big officer now. So he's a guy, this is a guy that knows. And we asked him and said, you know, okay, so what's going to happen? When's it going to be finished? He's like, man, it's never going to finish, you know, until, wow. You know, he said, until the Ukrainian people understand how hard they're getting screwed and stand up on their own themselves, you know, it's just going to keep going. We're going to keep fighting. And, you know, I mean, the brainwashing in Ukraine is you know, it's beyond the chances of redeeming. You know, I mean, people there are so crazy now that he said it's going to just keep on going. You know, and I mean, the point is, okay, so if Russia wants to end the war, you know. If Russia doesn't want to lose, they have to make sure that the UKROPs don't break in to the Donbass cities. If the UKROPs can bust through our defensive lines, make it into Gorlovka, Makiivka, Donetsk, then the fight for Bakhmut or Mariupol is going to look like a picnic compared to what comes next. Because if the UKROPs make it into the city, then that means the Russians are going to have to come. I mean, the border of the Russian Federation is 100 kilometers from, you know, the Donetsk city limits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Russians, I mean, the roads are going to all be blocked with refugees. By the time the Russians get here, the UKROPs will be, you know, hunkered down and dug in the city. They're going to be surrounded by a million human shields. And, you know, it'll be like Stalingrad, you know, and, you know, the danger would be that the Russians would then say, okay, look, you know, we don't want to have this humanitarian catastrophe, so we're going to negotiate a peace, you know, let us keep Crimea and a land bridge in Mariupol, and, you know, we'll, you know.
That's surrendering.
That's, you know, it's getting pencil whipped. You know, as they call it, like in golf, you know, where the one guy cheats, you know, when it's writing down the strokes, you know, it's,
got it.
They can militarily win the war and still diplomatically lose it, you know, by, I mean, you know, they got chumped by the West in 1990 when they said we won't move eastwards with NATO. They got chumped for 8 years by the Minsk agreements. You know,
yes, they did.
They do not have a good track record when it comes to, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. You know, well, they've been fooled more than twice now, dude. So the people here don't have any confidence in Russian negotiations with the West. You know, it won't turn out good. You know, it's, you can't show where it has, and it's only turned out very terrible. On the other hand, you know, I mean, Russia doesn't need to go all the way from Donbass to Kiev. You know, the Russian border is 150 kilometers, you know, north of Kiev. You know, they can, if they decide to, they can come swooping down. They can take Kiev, you know, crossing, you know, less than a quarter of the distance from Donbass to Kiev by coming down from the, it's from Belarus, it's 50 kilometers. The border, the Belarusian border is 50 kilometers from Kiev. Hmm. You know, if any time that they decide to get serious, you know, to fight this war as they should, like as they did in the Second World War, because understand that, you know, Russia is basically facing the same existential threat that it was facing in 1942 when the German Nazis invaded. You know, so either if Russia can take Kiev, Russia wins. If the Nazis can take Donetsk, the Nazis win. You know, and
it's distilled down to that level. That's where it is.
That is pretty much it, bro. And I mean, it's and the other thing I'll say too is that the longer this war goes on, the worse it's going to be for Russia, which means the worse it's going to be for everybody. Because, you know, the provocations. I mean, this thing with the dam that they just blew up, man. I mean, that's, you know, that just goes to show. I mean, you know, the shelling of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. You know, that, I mean, there's nothing, there's no crime that these Nazis won't commit. You know, they have chemical weapons. They've used them.
I know.
You know, there's nothing. You know, and of course it's coming out now. You know, the whole thing about, you know, that we were talking about for years, the biological weapons labs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's beyond any dispute. Only an idiot or a liar says that that's not true now. And, you know, I mean, when you're talking about a biological weapon, you're talking about, you know, crimes against all of humanity, because nobody, you know, can use, you know, some kind of biological weapon.
Right.
And not have it get out of control, you know.
Right.
And so
let me hold on.
Go ahead.
We only have a couple minutes. This professor who wrote the article that I alluded to earlier, his name is Sergei Karaganov, I guess. He said here, even if we completely liberate the Donetsk, Lugansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson regions, it will be a minimal victory. A slightly greater success would be to liberate the whole of eastern and southern Ukraine within a year or two of fighting, but it would still leave part of the country with an even more embittered ultra-nationalist population pumped full of weapons from the West, a bleeding wound that threatens inevitable complications, such as another war or a continuing war. The situation could be worse if we liberate the whole of Ukraine as the cost of monstrous sacrifices and are left with ruins and a population that mostly hates us. It would take more than a decade to re-educate them. Those are some of the options that this guy spelled out in his article. He's saying the same thing you are. This is not going to end. The West is going to keep pumping in munitions, money, and there's always draftable people around and mercenaries as well. So how's it going to end? How's it going to end like this?
It's, you know, and it's like I tell my friends here, you know, I mean, I'm a Russian Orthodox Christian. I believe in God. I believe that this is not the only world and not the only life. And I say it like this, man. Our job is not to save the world. Our job is to save our own souls by trying to save the world.
Nicely said. Nicely said. If anything happens, we're out of time, but if anything happens to Putin, I'm assuming that Medvedev will step right in. He seems to be the guy. He's very verbal. He's the attack dog between the two of them. He says things that Putin would not say or is not saying.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Medvedev?
Medvedev, you know, he was considered to be a very pro-Western liberal for many years. Then shortly before the special operation, you know, he started becoming pretty, you know, stridently pro-Russian and kind of militant. Mm-hmm. He said a lot of tough stuff. You know, the number one rule of politics, bro, is that what they say means nothing and what they do says everything, you know. So,
right.
You know, he talks a good game, but there's a lot of people that aren't quite convinced, you know, that it ain't a show so far, you know. I mean,
I got
the
you.
Thing is, you know, at this point, I'd love to see Evgeny Prigozhin come in. You know, I'd like to see Prigozhin. I'd like to see Alexander Khodorkovsky, Oleg Sarev, who used to be a deputy in the Ukrainian Rada and was one mm-hmm. of the first guys to come over and help with the Donetsk People's Republic, mm-hmm. who now lives in Russia. You know, these are guys that I really respect, and, you know, I don't see anybody, you know, anywhere close to being their equals in Moscow, you know, so.
Gotcha. All right. Well said, Russell. Thank you. Thanks for sharing all of that. Very informative and very helpful to a lot of people. You be safe. Take care of you and yours, and we'll stay in touch.
All right, bro. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on again, Jeff.
You bet, Russell. Okay, good night. Russell Bentley over there, right in the middle of it, and a lot of good points. Very interesting. All right. Have a good weekend. We'll be back Monday. The network runs all through the weekend, so have fun. Sunday night, we'll do our little encore. And be safe and try to prepare. I know I've said that many times, but it's the truth. All right. Good night. Take care.